diabetes monitoring, ANA nurses are surveyed, food safety, and we're going to take a close look at food poisoning, specifically salmonella poisoning. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to this show. We have a lot going on this particular week as we move in towards the middle of the summertime, and I know that we're picking up a lot of prospective nursing students, people that are getting ready to start nursing programs in the coming fall semester, in addition to our long-term listeners. So I want to welcome everybody and encourage you to take advantage of the community and the ability for you to comment back and get in touch with us here in The Nursing Show. And you can do that in a couple of ways. You can check out The Nursing Show website, easy enough, nursingshow.com will get you there. And you'll find links in the show notes to everything we talk about. You'll be able to find other articles there and be able to comment on each and every one of those articles posted over at nursingshow.com. So find the link at the bottom of any article you'd like to leave a little note on and click the link to leave a comment and share your comments with the rest of the Nursing Show community. Of course, if you'd just like to get in touch with me by email, you can send those comments in here to The Nursing Show. Comments, suggestions, links, or even corrections if I've misspoken. We want to make sure the best possible information is provided for the community here. And that means that if you hear me say something that doesn't sound quite right or you'd like me to double check my facts, please send me that email to comments@nursingshow.com. It's a great way to get in touch with the community here and to have me get back in touch with you either directly by email or in the show at that very week. We had one comment on the Nursing Show site recently, and one of the comments was to tell a little bit more about myself. And there's some information on the site there, but I will remind all of you that may have been, especially new listeners that may haven't heard before. My name's Jamie Davis. I am a paramedic for a long time now, and also an RN. My background, as you might expect, is in emergency services and providing care in the emergency setting. But I really focus on my nursing care, even in the emergency setting, because I think it's important for us, no matter where we are in the healthcare spectrum, to care for patients as a whole and to bring some of the core tenets of nursing practice into all patient care arenas. So that's one of the things that I feel very strongly about. You can find some of my other programs over at medicast.com, where I produce a program on a weekly basis for EMTs and paramedics as well. But this here show, this program, is for nurses. For nurses, by nurses, because of the contributions from you and other members of the Nursing Show community. And I really focus on nursing care in all aspects of nursing care, specialties, as well as just general nursing care in a hospital setting or perhaps in a physician's office. Wherever you find yourself taking care of patients, nursing care is an important aspect of taking care of all of our patients and community health in general. So that's a little bit about me and a little bit about how the Nursing Show is focused. Time now to jump on into this week's news, and a couple of different stories jumped out at me and have a sort of a nursing focus to them. The first one is an article I found over at medicalnewstoday.com. This particular article looks at electronic tracking systems and how they can really help with overall patient care. In fact, one of them is focus of this article, looking at how electronic patient information from a medical device, such as some form of a diabetes monitoring device, can be shared back with a patient's care team. And so a patient can be sent home and their overall blood sugar and other aspects of their care can be monitored via this device remotely. This gives us a better picture of what's going on with the patient at home. We can actually trend them better. We may not see them for a couple of months, and we have to go by some of the lab tests and things like that that we do that are focused on looking at how the patient's been doing. But we really don't know how well they're managing their care at home. Maybe they're sporadically taking care of themselves. Maybe they've gotten their diabetes under control because they know they have an appointment coming up. This type of home monitoring system or some kind of tracking system can give us a better way to give patients care and help them to adjust to what's going on in their life. If we see that they seem to be slipping from their program, we can do some follow-up care, some phone call education, and help bring that patient back in line, ultimately providing them with a healthier experience. So, you know, I want you to look at what you do and think about how different aspects of your care could be affected if you could help that patient get some monitoring and follow-up once they leave your facility, or if you work in a physician's office or some kind of a clinic, how they can continue to receive some ongoing care even while they're at home. This reduces the cost of healthcare. It reduces the time the patient spends in a medical office. It develops just a better rapport, I think, with the patient in many cases, just because I think it gives us an opportunity to develop closer ties and to help understand what it is specifically that they're finding challenges with. Sometimes the things that we think are hard are not the things that the patients are stumbling over. Sometimes it can be the simplest aspects of their care because they just didn't understand something. And sometimes the way to find that is to look and see what they're having trouble with. And a monitoring system like this could be a big step towards helping care providers at all levels, whether you're looking at a nurse practitioner or a physician or a physician's assistant or nurse follow-up team from a facility or a doctor's office, to go ahead and follow up with those patients using the data from this type of a tracking system. Let's move on to our next story. And our next story even can be related back to the last one, because as technology comes along and helps to alleviate some of our workload and gives us the ability to focus on patients in a different way, it can help alleviate staffing concerns, which is something I think we all are painfully aware about. This next article actually releases the results from an ANA online poll, American Nurses Association, that drew in about 15,000 responses. This is from their Safe Staffing Saves Lives campaign website, and that's at safestaffingsaveslives.org. And they had this survey out there since March 2008, and it showed that about 7 out of 10 nurses had a concern or reported knowledge of insufficient staffing. 70%, and that's a significant number of respondents. About 7,900 respondents, a little over half, said they were considering leaving their position because of staffing issues. About 42% said that the reason they would leave was associated with inadequate staffing directly. Now, you can look at this in a lot of different ways, but it certainly points out that this is one of the issues at the forefront of our concerns for safe patient care. And a lot of people in the hospital environment and the administration would say that this is a labor issue, that this is employees grumbling about tough hours and hard work. But, you know, that's not the case. This is about patient care and patient safety. And there are nurses out there working many long hours, lots of overtime, and are still shorthanded and unable to safely care for their patients. And yet they have to go back because who else is going to care for those patients? And they're put in that tough environment and tough decision-making process where they have to determine whether they're going to keep their job and continue doing something that may not be in the patient's best interest, because they just can't not give them care, even if it's not the best care that they can give. And this is something I hope to see resolved as we continue to move forward in dealing with nurse staffing issues nationwide. So do you have an opinion about this? Were you one of the nurses that responded to this survey? Or would you have responded similarly or not if you'd known about it? I'd really like to hear from you. And this is a great opportunity for you to contact me back here at the show and send in an email, comments@nursingshow.com, or to contact me and leave a link or leave a comment directly on the show notes for this particular podcast. And we can share those comments with the rest of the Nursing Show community. I suspect that the Nursing Show community members are a little different than this survey of 15,000 nurses responding to this online poll. So this last story comes along and it caught my eye because, well, let's look at it from its just from its face here. If you knew that there was a problem with the way that food safety issues were being handled by a government agency or if the guidelines needed to be revised, how quickly would you get those revisions in place? I don't know. Would it take you 2 or 3 months to draw everything up and get them in place? Maybe 6 months, maybe a year, outside 2 years? Well, apparently, it's taken the federal government 20 years to come up with new food handling rules. Research discovered a problem during the Reagan administration. You remember Reagan? Some of you listening to this may not have been alive during the Reagan administration. That's how scary that is. But we're talking about contaminated eggs that got many people sick, but federal officials spent 2 decades, 20 years, talking about how to get around the issue and solve it. Well, the newest administration, the current White House administration, this past week released the finalized rules to deal with the nation's quote-unquote egg problem. And it was also used as an opportunity to overhaul the entire food safety system for much of the nation's fresh food, produce, and meat industry. This is dealing with problems we've had recently with E. coli and salmonella and dealing with things like spinach, lettuce, tomatoes. We had problems recently with all kinds of different foodstuffs. This is dealing with many millions of illnesses and thousands of deaths every year. So we're looking for food safety problems, getting them straightened out. And it's good that they're getting it straightened out, but my goodness, 20 years, please. I think a lot of nurses out there would understand that this is something that needs to be addressed. And while we may not necessarily directly be involved with safe food handling, even if you're not in the health department service in your community, certainly it is in all of our best interests for overall community health to make sure that our patients and the people we come in contact with understand basic food safety practices. So there's a lot of information that you can find online about this, and it leads us into this week's tip of the week. So this week, I thought I'd address some things about food poisoning. And since we were talking in that past article about egg handling and egg safety issues, I thought we would focus specifically on one type of food poisoning, salmonella or salmonellosis. So let's look at some of the details and statistics about this particular disease. The name salmonella refers to specifically a bacterium and this or a particular family of bacteria, and this group of bacteria is found in commonly as a cause of foodborne illness in the U.S. And most often we find it occurring in eggs, raw poultry. Sometimes we've also find it with unwashed fruits and vegetables. It's considered a foodborne illness, as I said, and usually because of unsafe handling practices or incomplete cooking of the food. Symptoms include just standard GI problems, including diarrhea, abdominal cramps, also fever and headache, and usually lasts about a week, a little less, 4 to 7 days, according to some of the research I've found. People generally recover on their own without any additional treatment. However, as is the case in most illnesses and infectious diseases, people who are at higher risk for any kind of illness, including anyone with a compromised immune system, such as the elderly or infants, are at higher risk and may need to be hospitalized for rehydration therapy. Salmonella can get into the bloodstream and can cause serious sepsis if it gets into the bloodstream, but this is not doesn't happen very often. And of course, the treatment when it has reached this point where they need to have further treatment in the hospital would be treatment with antibiotics. So let's talk a little bit about salmonella specifically and what kind of numbers we're talking about here. According to the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC in the U.S., about 40,000 people are reported with cases of salmonellosis during the course of a year in the U.S. There are probably many other milder cases that are not reported or diagnosed by a medical professional. Patients treat themselves at home, think they've caught a little stomach bug, which in fact they have, but it is not reported to any health agency or medical professional. And so the number may be as much as, get this, 30 times greater. And we're talking about a significant number of people here, possibly up into the nearly a million people or more cases of salmonellosis a year based on it. It's more common in the summer than in the wintertime. I think part of that is we get together for picnics and outdoor events where we gather people together and everybody brings something. Food sits out in an unsafe environment or perhaps gets over, stays warm and stays in that danger zone, breeding ground for bacteria too long. Children are most likely to get the disease, and the rate of diagnosed infections in children less than 5 years old is about five times higher than that of everyone else. So young children are especially likely to get it, and probably because they eat with their hands and are more likely to cross-contaminate their food. Again, remember that people who are immunocompromised and the very young and the very old are more likely to receive a severe infection case. And about 400 people die every year with acute cases of salmonellosis. The salmonella bacteria are gram-negative intracellular anaerobes, and they cause a lot of diseases. Different diseases caused in different hosts. So if you look at their existing in the bacterial or in the GI tracts of, say, poultry, they may cause a mild form of illness, but they are just carried in many cases in the poultry industry. And that's how they can eventually get into the reproductive system of some chickens and infect eggs. And so it's something that we have to constantly be aware of. And it may be more or less widespread depending on your region, depending on the time of year, and cannot be predicted. The infection usually begins with the ingestion of a bacteria from contaminated food or water. However, you can get the disease from direct contact with a human or an animal carrier, and so this can be important to understand. Specifically, reptile or amphibians can be carriers. So if you are a person who finds a turtle you'd like to keep as a pet, for your kids, a box turtle crossing your backyard, for instance, and you pick up that turtle and you're not careful about washing your hands and safe handling of the animal, especially with small children who like to carry the turtle around and then go eat their lunch, they can be infecting themselves with salmonella. So it's important to, if you are going to have reptile or amphibian pets, that you practice good hand washing techniques and safe handling of the animal when compared to, say, food handling. Bacteria get into the stomach and passes through and colonizes in the intestines and then begins to cause illness in the individual. And like many GI illnesses, individuals can transmit the disease to others via the fecal-oral route, where unsafe hand washing following trips to the bathroom when you're infected and you pass on the illness by handling food that goes to another person. This is a typical route of transmissions for many GI illnesses, and salmonella is no different. Again, estimates are 1.4 million people every year are infected with salmonella, and this is estimated only because only a small number of cases are actually reported to a healthcare professional. The rest are treated at home because it runs its course. The patient treats it as a normal GI illness and lets it run its course, and it's through within about 4 to 7 days. If you do have a patient that you suspect has this or any other foodborne illness, it comes down to really taking a thorough history on the patient. And like so many times, history comes into play and is very important. So developing good history-taking techniques is of vital importance in any healthcare arena. You need to find out specifically what they've had to eat recently. Inquire about restaurants that they may have attended or activities that they attended where multiple people were there. Why? Well, if one person got salmonella from a food source and multiple people were dining in the same location, it is likely that there is more than one case and this is not an isolated incident. Also, find out if they've been swimming in someone's pool. Perhaps there's a contaminated water source or something like that. And so you always want to ask them where they're getting their food and water over the last several days. Also ask if they've been traveling recently. Patients, especially who've been traveling internationally to a developing nation, can be a cause and a location of where they've contracted this particular illness. Salmonella manifests in the body in gastroenteritis, enteric fever, bacteremia, as well as some kind of a localized infection, or you may find that the patient is a chronic carrier of Salmonella. And so this is something that can be identified. Typically, because we're talking today about food poisoning, let's look specifically at that. Now, as I said, this usually happens during the summer months here in the Northern Hemisphere, May through October. The incubation period is from 8 to 48 hours after the ingestion, so that can give you a time range of how far back you need to go in your dietary history for the patient, and this can be contaminated food or water. Remember that. Also, that the symptoms that you're likely to see are going to be fever and chills. Patients will also be experiencing diarrhea, cramping, and nausea and vomiting. There may be a fever, but it usually resolves in 3 or 4 days. And the diarrhea usually takes care of itself, lasting about 3 to 7 days. And there may be some blood in the diarrhea. So the patients may be coming into an ER because of blood in their stool. Bloody diarrhea freaks them out. They come in, and this is the relationship. It's actually because of a food poisoning and not because of an ongoing GI bleed. However, long-term diarrhea, because usually Salmonella diarrhea is self-limiting, long-term, more than 10 days, usually is indicative of another problem and should be dealt with. Of course, patients with any of these problems are likely to become easily dehydrated, to experience electrolyte imbalances, and so it's important for us to help our patients maintain hydration. So you may have a patient call in not feeling so good, and you just want to remind them to try to stay hydrated as best as possible and maintain their electrolytes and try to eat as they are able. Other types of things that show up with Salmonella, as I said, enteric fever, also known as typhoid fever. Usually the incubation period is much longer, 5 to 21 days, and is usually from contaminated water or food products or animal products that have been in contact with an infected person. You know, we think about Typhoid Mary as the carrier. This is a Salmonella infection. And so this can be a much longer incubation period, and it can be a much more severe illness, lasting 7 to 10 days, including headache, cough, significant diaphoresis, anorexia, weakness, as well as just general malaise, abdominal pain, and also significant diarrhea. Some patients may actually become constipated, though. So it's not, diarrhea can be one side of it, but they may also experience constipation. And this is something that we need to be aware of. Patients generally resolve within 3 or 4 weeks, and sometimes, however, they develop some kind of a perforation in their intestinal tract, and this can cause additional problems such as endocarditis, pericarditis, pneumonitis, and other abscesses in the abdominal cavity. Occasionally, as I said, this does enter the bloodstream with a sepsis in the bloodstream, and these patients require treatment as well with antibiotics. And occasionally some localized infection of a patient in a certain part of the body, certain organ system, arteries, central nervous system, commonly in infants, lungs, joints, soft tissues, kidneys, and genital regions all have had some infections reported outside of the GI tract. But that's our look at Salmonella poisoning. And I wanted to focus primarily on foodborne Salmonella and the GI illnesses associated with salmonellosis. You want to make sure we're talking to our patients about safe food handling. So if you have somebody come in with this, you know, it's an opportunity for us to talk to them about how to make sure we're washing our hands while we're handling food, we're cooking food to proper temperatures, and there are numerous resources out there that help point patients in that direction. And you can often bring in a dietitian to help with that and talk about food, safe handling of food. It's also a good opportunity for you to go into a community setting and actually talk about safe food handling to patients in their communities, rather than waiting till they become sick and come in to see you in a facility. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to thank you all for checking out the show this week and remind you that I've got a lot of other resources and articles about everything I've talked about, the links to all the news items, as well as additional resources on salmonella poisoning. I've got links to the CDC page on salmonellosis, as well as several links to the FDA page, and also a great article over at emedicine.com that you'll find linked in the show notes. So go over to nursingshow.com. You'll find the nursing podcast category there, and just click on that link. You'll find all of the episodes of The Nursing Show with all of their links and resources there. I can present general information here, and I try to give you the best information I possibly can, but it is your job to follow up on the links in the show notes and see how it applies specifically to your practice, and make that information available to you so that you can pass it on to your patients in greater detail as needed. Don't forget also to send in your comments, suggestions, questions, and yeah, corrections too, all here to us at The Nursing Show. Send them in by email, comments@nursingshow.com, or leave those comments directly over at The Nursing Show site. At the bottom of every article, there's a comments link. Time to go, so we'll close out with some PodSafe music from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This song from Brian Fitzpatrick and the Band of Brothers, Hey Mary, is available for you there, and you'll also find the link in the show notes to check it out over at iTunes if you're interested in purchasing it. I would urge you to do so. You know, supporting these independent artists who provide their music free of charge to podcasts like this one is a great way to get their music out there, and it's a great way to support podcasting in general. So show your support and let them know you heard it here on The Nursing Show. That's it. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, reminding all of you to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Hey, Mary, is there anyone up there that wants to see me? Does anybody care, and will they know me? Far beyond the shadow of this dream. Hey, Mary, is there anyone up there that wants to see me? Does anybody care, and will they know me? Far beyond the shadow. I've still got work to do here. My time is far from through here. Someday you'll see me when the clock strikes noon again. Hey, man. Songs to write here. I still got a light to light here. Someday you'll see me when the clock strikes noon again. Shadow.